My name is Hadi Askari. I'm from Delft University of Technology in the Netherlands. And I'm going to be talking about mostly basically my own, some experience we've had as a team on working with internet measurement sets and how they can be turned and used for work in the public policy related fields. And I'm by training myself a software engineer originally, and I've now part of a technology policy and management group, so I'm the only one with basically computer science skills there. And there's lots of great data out there that can play a lot of role in these projects, but it's not always so easy. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about that. And I hope mostly to stimulate a little bit of a debate or discussion or maybe ideas. So I'm going to basically give away the whole talk in two sentences, that measurement projects often fail to have the desired or deserved impact on different telecommunication or internet policy debates simply because of a gap that exists between how these projects gather their data and how researchers from other teams who actually write these papers are able to use these data. So before I open up what this gap is, which is going to be the rest of this paper, I'm going to explain a bit why this matters. So there's obviously a real need for large-scale empirical evidence-based work in public policy. Lots of the papers that go around, lots of the ideas that go around are based on hunches that people have, they're based on anecdotes, or they're based on simulation models that are untested empirically, and they are all excellent starting points, but they're not something you would want to actually base policy on. And at the same time, my own experience has been that policymakers are actually very receptive towards any piece of research that is based on strong empirical evidence. So I've been surprised. The most recent case was when we used data from the EFF SSL Observatory to do some work on how the SSL market is functioning, how the CAs are functioning, etc. And we, based on that data, we also, in the end, criticized the law that the European Commission was passing in this way, that it's not going to have the desired effects based on what we see is actually happening out there. And to my own surprise, in a very short period, we were invited by the European Commission task force working on that law, asking us for input and asking us to explain it. So there is actually a big need for it. And if you put these two points together, you would think that this should be a very fruitful marriage between basically these two different groups of people, but it's actually sometimes rather frustrating. So this is why. Measurement experts, basically, they create a measurement tool and they make it run on an infrastructure. And this is all very hard work. But it's only half of the work that's required to turn that data into something useful. The other two parts are that the output of those measurements has to be somehow gathered, turned into a data set, and then some people with a bit of a different background, they have to start experimenting with models, add variables, start, I don't know, gathering information about the environmental context of these observational units, extract patterns, insights, etc. And as policy researchers, the interesting part is the last part, so it's number four. That's the part where the creativity and their input and their theory all work on, but actually a large part of time is spent on the third part, and that's what I call this gap. And it's caused by the different needs and values that are there. So just as some examples, for instance, computer scientists favor granular data. They favor having logging everything to the detailed and being able to reproduce everything from the source if necessary. But when you're doing policy research, you're often actually interested in like country level information or at most ISP level information, so on an aggregated level. And of course it's possible to move from one to the other, but this creates two different kind of expectations with what needs to be done. So in the basically the next part I'm going to talk about five different simple points, I think, that can be used as some ideas on how an ideal measurement set should be so that it would be easier for these people from other disciplines or basically social scientists to use this kind of data. Number one is the sets should keep archives, the measurement projects. It seems, it might seem very obvious, but the reality is lots of projects don't keep archives. They have only real-time feeds. And at any point in time, you can, if you join them from that point onwards, you might be able to keep the feeds and do some work on it. But any of the actual big projects that are useful are the ones that typically the project owners themselves are keeping these feeds, or some other platform like Measurement Lab in collaboration with the original test developers, they're keeping these feeds. Number two, it's useful to have aggregated versions of the data as well. So this is both in terms of spatial aggregation, so in terms of, as I said, countries or ISPs, and in terms of time-wise. So instead of like per test aggregations over time, like over a year, over a quarter, over a week, these are very useful. And because of the different units of analysis used and also less data to download. So in the paper, I've actually used our experience on working with GlassNOST, which is a test that can be used to detect whether ISPs are doing deep packet inspection or not, and whether they're using that to throttle BitTorrent traffic. And it's our experience on using that data, and we wanted to basically answer the question of what the effects of different privacy rules in countries and the effects of network neutrality rules were on whether this is being used or not, these kind of technology, DPI is basically used or not. And in the paper we go, I actually open up that a lot to give a very clear example. So for instance, you have to download like several terabytes of data from Measurement Lab, and in the end, the only interesting point in that several terabytes of information is basically less than a couple of megabytes. And this just increases the barriers of entry to be able to use this kind of data. Measurements ought to have clear verdicts and interpretations. So basically, we would like to be able to easily understand what something means. So whether in the end the test indicates that what we're seeing is indicative of BitTorrent throttling happening or not. And this is often not the case. It's very unclear. Of course, it's to be expected because in real life, measurements are messy. But I think in reality, it comes down to things like whether the tests have clear documentation, whether they have complete audit trails, whether parsers are given and there are access to the authors or the community. So again, to use the GlassNOST example, GlassNOST is crowdsourced, so users go to the MLab website, they can run the test, and the test takes about 8 minutes to run, and then it reports to them whether it thinks that their ISP is actually throttling with traffic or not. This result is not saved, so actually it is calculated, but it's never saved in the log files. Only the actual packet traces are saved, and those are what's available. Then the interesting thing is when we try to understand from those packet dumps what actually the test showed to the user, there are lots of corner cases and edge cases which makes it extremely hard to understand. So we had to spend a very large time, I think like 1 month, trying to reverse engineer what the test designers were doing actually and what they meant to then be able to gather this information and get this. And of course, Google, for instance, was very helpful. As the people who are running at Measurement Lab, they created access for us to the actual test authors, and this helped over time. But I mean, there is just so much information in the authors of those tests that if they haven't been put out there in some form of some document or some parser or something, it's just going to be impossible for anybody who wants to use that data. even though the data is there. Consistency of measurement instrument over time. So this basically, they did, for instance, lots of tweaking on their infrastructure, which means that later on, attaching together these kind of tests becomes very hard, or there are periods where there's just gaps in the data, because although users were running the test, but the rsync failed for some reason. And these are, I think, obviously out of the scope of probably the people who designed these tests in the way, but having perhaps some kind of collaborative platforms where these tests are run, it helps to resolve lots of these issues. And for instance, in terms of tweaking with versions of tests, one simple solution might be to have parallel versions of the tests running while these tweaks are being done. And the last one is, if you want to do empirical econometric work, you would prefer to have sample validity in terms of having data from different parts of the world or different ISVs, etc. And for instance, in the case of a platform like MLab, this can be facilitated in the following way. When a user connects to that platform, the system can look up, based on the location of this user, what kind of tests that have been done too little for that kind of user. And then it can offer a user, so from the country you are connecting to, like lots of people have run NPT, but nobody has run Glasnost. Would you like to, for instance, take part in this test? So using some kind of basically skills from other disciplines like industrial design or these kind of other disciplines that attach to this work, then this sample validity could be promoted. So these are basically the five ideas of the ideal measurement set. And just to go over them one more time, I didn't put a slide with all of them in it, but to have them all to keep archives and have newer versions, to provide aggregated versions and to have clear verdicts and interpretations of what the tests mean. Also, you can think of that in terms of what false positives mean or false negatives, etc. Consistency over time and sample validity. The first time I sent these ideas last year to IMC, I got a response back from them that you're using one basically case study to question lots of practices that are happening in internet measurement. And my point was, no, that this is not actually one case study. This is, I think, something more systematic, and it's something that we at least have seen in like 5-6 different data sets that we've used, which I've listed here. These are all large data sets. They're all being professionally gathered by lots of teams or different teams. And I've listed on these different criteria that I've mentioned here and tried to give them basically grades. All of them were good on some things and were bad on some other things. So, but my point being is that I don't think that's just one case. I think these are some guidelines that could be used more generally. Second feedback I got was, okay, great ideas. Who's going to pay for it if social scientists want to use this? What's the relation between that and the people who are creating the measurement test? I basically have two answers for this. One of it is, if creating some kind of impact on the policy debates is important for the people developing these tests, I think they should do it as a basically a cost of doing business. So this should be seen a bit upfront of thinking about these kind of issues and handling a bit of these issues. And also, it's not necessarily expensive to do lots of these ideas. So often, it's just about thinking in advance about lots of these. And I use the idea of what you have in software engineering of hallway usability testing, when you want to test your user interface. Instead of going through very complicated matters, you just grab the next one passing through the hallway, next person, put him in front of your computer and ask him to use the program. And probably in the first like five things that the guy says is going to be 80% of the problems that people are going to face with that interface that you've designed. I think it's the same here. So I think if any team is developing some kind of measurement set, in their own school or faculty or university, they can just talk with some econometricians and say, okay, if you want to actually use this data set afterwards, what are your needs or how is it going to function for you? Or can you like spend one day trying to use this data and see if anything interesting can come out of it? I think already 70-80% of these problems can be found, and often they could be probably solved. And third response I got, interesting review I got this time on CSET was, wouldn't it actually make more sense to teach computer skills to social scientists instead of requiring the reverse? And I agree with this. Actually, we've tried and we've had moderate success. It depends. I think if the students have some mathematical or engineering background before, not necessarily in CS, they can pretty quickly pick up things like SQL and use it. But still, when it comes, for instance, to parsing text files and log files and stuff like that, it's just too complicated. And it creates a very huge barrier of entry before anybody can actually start using that data set. And some of the other things, like the rich context in which originally the test was created, those are unrelated to the skills of the person who wants to use the data set. It's just some context that's not available at the moment that the data set is going to be used. So that basically brings me to the end. I would like to, I mean, don't want this talk to be like bashing anybody, so I would like to use it to thank everybody who's given us the data set ever to use in our research, and also to thank Usenix for providing a grant for me to come here. And that's a link to some of the work we've been doing using these different data sets in terms of policy. I don't know. It's a good question. I really don't know. So, for instance, just as an example that comes to my mind, Spam House, they collect lots of data on botnets, etc., but they don't keep historical versions of any of it. So I don't know if that's just a matter of the way they function, because they only require it at the moment, or does it have some other need to it? And there are multiple examples of these kind of projects. What would your own guess be about why?
I've worked with Spam House data before. I thought they do some archiving. They do historical. I think it may just be monetary. They just produce too much data to hold on to, and they're not, the Library of Congress, so they're not mandated to keep it around for a very long time.
Yeah.
But researchers keep this around. So the Spam House data I used 4 or 5 years ago, that's sitting on a hard drive somewhere. I don't know where, but it's on a hard drive somewhere. And it's out there in the community, crowdsourced perhaps.
Yeah. I think it's like, if you're making the test, you have some other purpose. So you want to do something, the fun part for you probably is something else, the interesting part for you probably is something else, the challenge is something else. And after you've made it, often I think the fact that just to keep this running on, because this is an interesting experiment that's gathering this data, and although you're moving past it, it can still continue to gather this data. I think maybe that's also just a matter of reality. So for instance, with Glasnost, the whole, I think, team who were working on it are now out of academia and they're in industry and doing something else. But this test they developed in 2008, it's still continuing to run and gathering all this data. So I don't know actually how that could be thought of. I mean, I see shared platforms like MLab, which are funded, that take away part of that monetary cost, and also they have people who are actually monitoring the system. That could solve some of these issues, I think, over the long run.
Well, one of the things that I know from empirical research, also on our own experience, is that if you want to run an experiment, you have to design your own measurement. Just collecting the data is like more NSA style. Just grab everything and just do it. Are you sure this does make sense if you have an archival of things that were collected? If you don't know beforehand what was the experiment you wanted to use them for? So are you sure that one of the methodology claiming to give isn't right?
So I completely understand your point. The way we work actually turns out to be a bit more opportunistic. So we do not have we cannot say we are interested in this and this and then design a data set based on that from that point on. We look at the data sets that are out there and we see what kind of questions that data set could answer. So this is, of course, because we haven't been in that design period. Often they might have been designed for something else. And that is a true limitation. But still, I think the mere fact that some of these projects have been like gathering data on some aspect of the internet for 4 or 5 years or on really large aspects, and then they can be used to answer some questions, which basically without that data, you have no other way of answering that question. So I understand your point, but I think given despite that limitation, still there's lots that can be done.
Sample was collected at another, for instance, the hash of the IPs, then we don't know if it's uniform distributed, it's not. So it may hamper directly your main question you need to answer.
That's true. I think it comes down to having insight into how it was collected and whether it can be used in a way or not. So, for instance, the first project that got us into this direction was the data from a spam trap. It was actually collected by a person who was very helpful in all the stages of using the data because he also had some kind of personal interest in using that data. And I think in that way it worked very well with the person who's actually gathered the data being in a very close collaboration with you, telling you all the time, like, okay, what were the problems, how this was collected. But yeah, I think it's important to have that information.
Have you looked at any of the business analytics software that's out there? So I'm reminded of a problem that my wife had, which was that are extremely non-computer scientists. And as an MBA, she has to look over a large data set. And their solution is to use visual analytics and drag and drop style techniques to essentially build what I would consider to be a very simple SQL query. And it seems to work well for a community that isn't that doesn't have a computer science background. And I wonder if that's a more realistic approach than kind of trying to guess what the correct aggregation operator would be for a large data set.
Maybe, I don't know. I haven't seen any tool so far that could do lots of the stuff we actually want. So, for instance, I had this discussion just a couple of days ago with somebody from one of the developers of Kettle, which was saying that they have some tool basically that does lots of the stuff I was explaining to them. But none of the actual standard packages, for instance, they can do IP2ASN or GeoIP lookup data, which is something you would have to do before you can do anything else. And if that GeoIP data, for instance, is not recorded with the data, then you have to remember that you need GeoIP data from the time that the test was done. So you need historical GeoIP data. And these are kind of needs that are not directly addressed by any of these packages. So what we end up doing is actually writing our own scripts to be able to do that. Also with the test, parsing the text files, which is like pretty common. Again, I'm not sure of a tool that, for instance, if it's in nice columns, they can do it. But if it has a very free format text file, which it gets a bit complicated, yeah.
So you're asking quite a bit of us,
right?
And no offense, it's not really our job to produce data that's good for your purposes. Our job is to produce data that's good for our purposes. Why should we care?
I think because in the end, there are lots of decisions being made on internet policy, and lots of these decisions are not being made based on sound empirical evidence. And the community is creating lots of these data that can be used very easily for all of these kind of research that's being done. So for that I think is the win-win in this problem that I'm trying to explain. Is it, but you don't seem to agree with it, or?
Well, I mean, like, I'm more concerned about publishing my next paper.
Right.
I mean, like, that's the starting fact in the world.
Right, yeah.
You know, and I'm not really thinking about, well, first of all, I would be honored if anyone in EFF is interested in my data that I collect, which they're not. So, like, I'm not really planning that's so, like, how, I mean, you have a question with the message. I mean, the paper is about the message. Like, how do you make it like a standard practice that, like, if I'm collecting some data and I have no idea that this data is relevant to your community, how do you make sure that I should collect extra data so that, you know, we can use it for these other purposes? Like, what is my personal incentive and how do I know about it at the time in order to change my experiment?
Yeah, I think so. In science and academia, an incentive is to get basically citations. So often with lots of these data sets, I've seen that when they put them on their websites, they say, if you want to use this, please also cite this paper of ours in which we explain how this. So, I mean, it's maybe it doesn't build up for the whole thing, but it's a way that the community functions. And also, I think maybe if the point that I can get through is just that actually think about the possibility that the data that you're collecting, which you think might have no practical implication after what you're doing, maybe some other researcher finds a creative way of using your data to answer a question that they have. And you don't have to think about that part. The only thing you have to do is put your data out there in a format that they can find it, and then also have facilitated some things if they want to use it to be able to go around with it. So, for instance, typically you would have created parsers for yourself to use the data if it's in a special form. Just putting those parsers out there somewhere, it would be very helpful for the other group who wants to use it, etc. And from there on, you can move on.
So, can you ask one more question? In the meantime, the next speaker, please set up. Thanks.
Can you give some example of the questions you actually would like to answer?
Yes. So, for instance, with the spam trap data, we looked at the infection rates, average infection rates per country and per ISP, and we were interested in knowing what role internet service providers can play in combating botnets and what economical incentives function on them. So, for instance, in terms of regulatory actions, what laws countries had passed, how they affected the private sector, and how the private sector, based on its own understanding of those situations, would sometimes make actions. And we found actually enormous differences among countries. So you had internet service providers in the same region with a 10 times difference and across countries with amazing differences. And we also, often lots of very strange insights come out of these. So, for instance, we found out that, can I also have one other question as well after, because Jean is asking?
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. So for instance, what you get is that we found out, for instance, that actually passing a regulation mandating the ISPs to do something didn't have that much of an effect, but the mere fact that the regulator in a country expressed concern about the issue, that had more effect on the industry. And then we started thinking of how can just the regulator expressing concern about something affect the industry. And then it actually, for instance, it helps to clarify lots of legal issues. So often the industry wants to do something, but they have legal problems that prohibits them. So, and all of this comes out of a spam trap data set. But it's using that data and then building all these questions on it. And I could give you examples on all the rest also in the break if you are more interested. I would be more than happy.
I just wanted to address your incentives program. That would be a tremendous broader impact, right? So I'm sure you're familiar with that section of your NSF, Intellectual Merit Evaluation. And it also would be very
So you're absolutely right. No, so I was asked a question not because I disagree with the question, but you're absolutely right. I think my comment was more to the point.
No, I just wanted to bring this up. This is